Rabbi Kahn sends out an email once a week. He teaches at an organization called Eisha Torah in Jerusalem. Many of you may have heard of it, and he's a very popular lecturer there. It sends out a very interesting email once a week. Rabbi Kahn also is director of the Foreign Students Program at Bar-Ilan University, and he has had many, many students from Chicago and around the States, and he's, yeah, in both capacities in the States on a tour. We're very fortunate that he's taken time off to come to Chicago and to speak to us, the Buffet of Jewish Thought. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Rabbi Ari Kahn.
Thank you, Rabbi Kahn. As far as I know, we're not related, but I enjoy calling someone else Rabbi Kahn. Brucius, Francis, Shkola. Last year, when you had me speak, on a very practical topic. Things about making a golem. So today I want to speak about something far more theoretical, dealing with caring for parents. The truth is that there are certain topics that, as rabbis, we're asked to speak about which are enthralling, which are interesting, and there are certain topics which we're asked to speak about which are important. And the whole issue of dealing with parents and caring for parents, I think, is one of these issues which is of incredible importance. Let me start by making an observation. I suspect that most of you know that listed among the Ten Commandments is the commandment, says, Kavedes Avicha Vesimecha, which we can translate as honoring your father and mother. If it made it into the Ten Commandments, apparently this is a very important commandment. Perhaps I'd be mistaken by saying that the Ten are more important than others. There's a whole history in terms of Jewish law, and there is a problem of making that statement. Nonetheless, the sense that we have is that those things which entered into these, as it were, top ten, really are the foundation of Judaism. What would have happened if we had no commandment to honor our parents? Would we not honor them? Would we not respect them? Would we not care for them? I think the answer to all those questions is that we certainly would. In fact, in a passage in the Talmud which is incredible, and the more you think about it, the more incredible it is, the Talmud poses a question: to what extent is the honoring of parents? What's an example of somebody who went beyond, or perhaps fulfilled the way that he should? And the Talmud makes a very brief statement and says, when it introduces a story, it says that there was once a story of Oved Kachovim Achas Miashkelon, a certain idolater who lived in the city of Ashkelon, and his name was Dama ben Nesina. Now, you can't help but appreciate the irony of this. One of the major messages of the Torah, of the Tanakh, the entire Jewish Bible, is the concept of one God. It would be fair, perhaps, to look at the whole Bible as being a polemic against idolatry. I think all of us would be very hard-pressed to find another positive statement which is said about an idolater or idolaters. Where in the world does the Talmud say, oh, you're looking for something good? Go look at idolaters. They know how to do, and fill in the blank. I won't put my colleagues on the spot by asking them for another source like that, but I can't think of another one. Afterwards, I'm sure they'll correct me. I can't think of another place where the Talmud says something really positive against idolaters. People of other places, Babylonians, Persians, and others, they speak about people in terms of a cultural affiliation. But to speak about an idolater in a positive way, it's incredible. In fact, the person in Tanakh, in the Bible, who is most associated with the commandment of honoring certainly his father, is none other than Esav, who again is not seen as a very positive character. I think what we can discern from this is that to a very great extent, honoring one's parents is something which comes natural. I grew up in New York, in an area in New York called Brooklyn. The particular neighborhood is known as Bensonhurst. I suspect none of you are from Bensonhurst here. This past Shabbos, I spoke at Eisha Torah in Las Vegas, And there were three people from Bensonhurst who were sitting right there. I was absolutely shocked. One person who lived two blocks away from my father's shul. In Bensonhurst, you had a number of Italian Americans who, shall we say, in the language that was used then, were well-connected. People who were not necessarily the most God-fearing or good citizens. But if you would say something bad against their parents, particularly against their mothers, that would probably be an invitation for, shall we say, a violent response. You don't have to be Jewish to respect your parents. You don't have to be Jewish to love your parents and to honor them. So if that's the case, then why did the Torah have to teach us this? Why do we need the commandment? You have an answer. Let me make a second observation. And hopefully this will come to begin to answer the first. When the Jews left Egypt, on the way to Mount Sinai, they stopped at one place and they received a number of commandments. The place was called Morah. In Morah, we learned that they received the commandments of keeping Shabbos, honoring the parents, and also the law about the red heifer. Why couldn't God wait another couple of weeks till we got to Sinai to receive the commandments? So we're taught that the Jews traveling as a nation without commandments was something which harmed them. Spiritually, they needed something. They needed to identify with something. They needed something to learn. They needed something to practice. So the first three commandments which were given were Shabbos, honoring the parents, and the red heifer. If you allow me 2 minutes to explain this, why those were picked, and we'll get right back to the issue of the parents. A number of years ago, a couple of people who were interested in doing outreach work spoke to one of the leading rabbis in Jerusalem, and they asked him, when teaching people with limited backgrounds, which things should be chosen? Where do you start? And I think this is a question which many rabbis have, and certainly rabbis who are involved in outreach. What's the first commandment you teach people? And of course, the reality to the answer to this is it depends on the individual, depends on what they're interested in studying, and it depends on their own background and interests. But this rabbi said, take a look at what was taught then when the whole Jewish people were leaving Egypt and heading towards Sinai. What commandments were given them? Honoring parents, Shabbos, and the red heifer. Why these three? Honoring one's parents is a prototypical commandment between man and his fellow man. We have a whole bunch of laws, a whole list of laws, which tell us how to treat our fellow man. The most basic law how to treat our fellow man, or topic dealing with treating our fellow man, is honoring one's parents. It's also, I believe, the most logical. One of the great collectors of Jewish law, in a book known, Rabbi Epstein, in a book known as the Aruch HaShulchan, he wrote, honoring one's parents is the most logical commandment there is. As we've already said, we would have figured it out without God telling us. So why did God start us out by teaching us the law which is logical? Apparently, the beginning of one's involvement in Judaism necessitates something which makes great sense. For that matter, perhaps the most logical law, which is a law between man and God, would be the idea of a Shabbos, of a Sabbath day, of a day of rest. Can you imagine trying to convince slaves who've been enslaved for the past 210 years, how about from now on to always take one day a week off? Do you think that would have made sense to them in that context? Absolutely. So it's interesting that the two laws which were chosen was a prototypical law of man and his fellow man, and the second one was between man and God. And the third one, the red heifer. Well, those of you who know, the red heifer is perhaps the least logical law in the entire Torah. I'd actually venture to say that the reason why the red heifer was chosen is that when one has a relationship with God, one doesn't only do things which make sense to us. There needs to be something involved in our relationship with God which involves accepting God upon us and not just doing things we would have done otherwise. Perhaps a day a week, one day off a week, we would have done by ourselves. Perhaps honoring our parents we would have done by ourselves. But in order for there to be a relationship with God, there needs to be one step which is further. And it's not just us creating God in our image or creating a law within things which we already find comfortable. But perhaps that was the message. There also needs to be something. God gave us two, which were easy. And then for the third one, just realize that this is God giving us. There is a common understanding that the Ten Commandments are divided in half. The first five dealing with man to God, and the second five dealing with man to man. Has anyone here ever heard that before? Yes. Did you actually go back and count and look at the first five? There's a problem. The fifth commandment, which is between man and God, is the commandment to honor one's parents. Why is that between man and God? I've just been spending time trying to insist that this commandment is between man and the fellow man. Apparently, and this is the introduction to what I'm going to talk about, apparently honoring parents, despite the fact that it's logical and we would have done it without being commanded, apparently there is also an aspect of honoring, respecting, and caring for our parents, which is not just something which is logical and is not just between man and man, but also deals with man and God. Let's explore this for one more moment. Why is it logical for me to take care of my parents or love my parents or respect them? They brought me into this world. They gave me food. They gave me shelter. They gave me clothing. They nurtured me. They're always there for me. And even though I'm 41 years old, if I need a little extra money, I can drop a hint. Ultimately, who is it that brings us into this world? Ultimately, who is it that gives us shelter? Ultimately, who is it that provides us with food, clothing? Ultimately, who is it that gives us that little extra money if we really need it? The answer to all those questions is that the reality is that it's God. And if an individual feels the relationship with their parents in a healthy way, they feel that they're appreciative of everything that they have, and therefore they do want to care for them, this should also open up in their hearts and minds a desire to have a more fulfilling relationship with God. Because ultimately, all the reasons which we lay down, ultimately everything comes from God. That is most likely what the great commentary, the Ramban Nachmanides, put forward when he said that the first five deal with the relationship between man and God, and the second five between the relationship between man and the fellow man. The performance of the commandment to honor our parents is done with our parents, between man and man. But the objective of the commandment is to create an awareness between man and God. But why is this so important? We live in a world today where there has been a breakdown within the family unit. One of the saddest parts about traveling around, and I've been living in Israel for the past 18 years, and the society in Israel, and there are problems there, it's not something which is a perfect society, but there has been more of a profound breakdown within the family unit in the United States than there has been in Israel. People going through a first marriage, and then a second marriage, and sometimes a third marriage, as you pointed out, which is a very appropriate introduction. But what about the children from the first and the second? And sometimes to try to figure out who's who, you know, you need a scorecard. And when a mother goes on to have a new relationship, and the father goes on to have a new relationship, and the children are caught someplace in the middle, maybe the logic of honoring or caring for parents, which existed in the past, maybe it breaks down a little bit, or at least becomes more complex. There's another aspect, and this I say as an educator, and what I'm going to say right now is not a very simple statement. I think on a societal level, a lot of people have forgotten how to be parents. And maybe they're so sensitive to the profound generation gap which existed a generation ago, and the people who were brought up in the 50s and the 60s felt this incredible generation gap. Today I find among my students quite the opposite. I find among my students that there is no generation gap with their parents, for their parents are just as immature as they are. I was personally shocked, and I don't get shocked all that often. I was absolutely shocked 6 or 7 years ago when I was giving a class on Jewish ethics. One of the classes at the university I teach is one on Jewish ethics. I was giving a class, and I read through with them a responsa dealing with taking drugs. I feel if you want to have an impact on students, you need to speak about it, you need to bring issues up. We were discussing danger in Jewish law, right? We would, if it were here, we would title it Jewish bungee jumping in the Jewish tradition or something to that effect. But we spoke about danger and doing dangerous things. And one of the issues was taking drugs. One of the greatest, if not greatest, rabbis of the generation, Rav Moshe Feinstein, penned a responsa, laying down, if I'm not mistaken, 7 different reasons that a person shouldn't take drugs. The 7th was that if you take drugs, your parents wouldn't be happy with you, and you wouldn't be fulfilling the commandment of honoring your parents. As I say this, a hand goes up. I call on a young woman, and she says, I have friends who take drugs with their parents. And as I said, the first time I heard it, I was shocked. Since then, I've heard it enough times. I've spoken to parents who've told me, it's only pot. It's not like it's anything serious. And again, this really did strike me as something which was quite bizarre. And I understand the motivation of the parents. The motivation is to be friends with their kids. Issue is, it's not so simple. There needs to be discipline. And again, I'm not going crazy here on how much discipline. I haven't said that. I didn't say to beat the kids. I didn't say to lock them in the house. What I said is there needs to be some sort of distance. I've met kids who call their parents by their first name. I don't know what it's like in schools anymore over here. That's the one thing in Israel, in secular schools in Israel, people call their teachers by the first name. I believe, is it here as well? No, it's Mr. or Mrs., right? It's a little bit more formal. There they'll call the kids by the teacher by the first name, but that I've seen students as well. And it's something which is disturbing because it means that there really isn't the proper break where there should be. But if I follow only logic when it comes to honoring my parents, what if my background was a little bit dysfunctional? What if the sort of home I was brought up in, things weren't perfect? Right? What was that show? Ozzie and Harriet? Right? What if it wasn't something coming out of a Rockwell painting? And that, let's face it, isn't that the reality in life? That not all families are perfect? What about honoring the family? What about honoring the parents in a dysfunctional relationship? What about caring for the parents when the parents are no longer aware? What if the parents are quite difficult? What if all the logical reasons that we thought of immediately break down? What then would Jewish law say? So one thing we've already noted, that the obligation to honor, respect, care for our parents is not an obligation based upon logic exclusively. It's based upon because God said that we must honor them. That doesn't mean that in every situation, in every circumstance, the correct response is to keep the relationship. There are extreme examples. Let me begin by throwing out one or two, and then I'll get to the issue of caring itself specifically, and afterwards we'll have time for some questions. But what if the parents are evil people? Do you want an extreme example? What if the father raped the mother and produced the child? What if it was, even if you want to go one step further, what if it was a rape and a case of incest? Does the child produced have to have wonderful respect and awe and admiration for that father? Or do you say a father is a father? The Talmud doesn't quite answer that question, but it comes pretty close. Instead of going into a detailed discussion of what the Talmud does bring up, let me lay down some principles. I would make a distinction between, well, first let me say the obvious, or maybe for some of you it's obvious. You have a child who's religious and you have the parents who are not religious. Can the child say, well, since my parents aren't religious, I don't have to respect them? Clearly not. Although I'll mention something which is interesting. Almost every time, I'm willing to say this is 99th percentile, when kids become observant and they're brought up in non-observant homes, one of the first things the parents will say is, doesn't it say in the Torah that you should respect your parents? And they say, yeah. I don't want you to be religious. Do you know how many times I've heard this? I know. Just from your response, I suspect some of you have heard it as well. One does not have to listen to their parents when they tell you to do something which is immoral. One does not have to listen to one's parents and tell you to break a Torah law. One doesn't even have to listen to one's parents and tell you to break a rabbinic law. One doesn't even have to listen to one's parents and they tell you to do something against a Jewish custom. This is brought out by another verse where it says a man should have respect of his mother and father, but then the verse continues and says, and keep my Shabbos. Seven plural, my Sabbaths. Which means I am the same God that it tells you to honor and respect your parents. I am also the same God who tells you that you honor the Sabbath. And the Sabbath is an example, just like we honor the Sabbath. I had a case, a situation, a student who is becoming religious. And she has wonderful parents. They just happen not to be Orthodox. That's not a sin. And her problem was that she was going home now between the semesters, and she said her parents drive to the synagogue every Friday night. What should she do? Could she go and drive to synagogue? Does she not drive to synagogue? Now, I'm not going to give you the answer, because each case like this is an individual case. And one needs to know exactly where the person is at, exactly where the parents are at, what is the larger situation. But should this girl respect her parents? Absolutely. They're wonderful people. They just don't happen to be Orthodox. Could the parents therefore say, we demand that you do such a thing? The child does not have to listen to that. Although what one will find that's in this area particularly, maybe more so than almost any other area, the wisest thing that one can do is to learn the principles, which I'm trying to put down now. But when the individual cases come up, you consult a rabbi. You consult a rabbi for two reasons. One, the rabbi knows more. And two, sometimes you need somebody objective to listen to both sides. Because sometimes things that people are willing to fight for should not be fought for. And things that other people are willing to give up on maybe should not be given up on. There's another issue here, which is also counterintuitive. And the Talmud points this out. When it says honor, it says honor your father and mother. When it says respect, it says respect. A man should respect his mother and his father. Now, it's very subtle, but most people will honor their mothers more than their father, but respect or have awe, fear of their father more than their mother. The Talmud flipped them, the Torah flipped them both around. When it said honor, it put the father before the mother. When it said respect, it put the mother before the father. The Talmud says that this comes to teach us that both of them should be equal, but again, it's not just the logical idea that I should respect or honor or care for my parents. It even goes to the cases which are a little bit outside of the normal, because it's trying to create something which is somewhat counterintuitive. As far as the parent who is absolutely antisocial in their behavior, the parent who is the criminal, the parent who is abusive, the parent who puts the child's emotional or physical life in danger, that child should stay away from that parent. But again, one needs to be able to define in individual cases if this is what's really going on. In such cases, one's own life takes precedence and one has to pull back and deal with their own life. It's not honor your parents to the point of death. The parent who's not, as I said before, the one who simply is not religious, but the one who is criminal. The Talmud discusses this. And now, I have a difficulty. I don't know how many of you are Ashkenazim, I don't know how many of you are Sardim, but this happens to be one of the areas of law that there are two different approaches, which is again why I say, if a question comes up to pose it, Maimonides, he tells us even if the parents are wicked, they are still deserving of our respect. There are others who say, no. The Ashkenazi custom would seem to be that if the parents are really wicked, and I want to stress, wicked now, that one can need not respect them. Or, let's be more practical, because I think the main issue really comes, especially with elderly parents, comes to issues of care. My wife and I have been living in Israel for the past 18 years. Before we moved, my parents sat me down. I think it was... Remember how parents sit you down every now and again? That was the last time they sat us down, or me down. And they said, do you really want to move there now? We moved right after we got married. We'd have our last Sheva Brachas on the way to the airport. And my father and mother are, I guess, the last of the great Zionists. And they wanted to move to Israel 40 years ago. But they ended up, my father's an only child, ended up staying in Brooklyn to care for his parents. Of course, I know you know the way the story goes. You end up putting a down payment on the house because buying is cheaper than renting, and then you pay off the mortgage. But before you know it, the parents get elderly and you have to take care. Does a person have the right to leave their parents if the parents need them? That's not a simple question. There is, however, a passage in the Talmud. I want to read this passage, and then we'll draw some conclusions. The Talmud tells us that there was a rabbi named Rav Asi. Rav Asi lived in Babylon. He had an elderly mother, and his mother said to him, get me some jewelry. I want some jewelry. So he got her. He made her some jewelry. Now, let me make an observation. Taking care of parents, honoring parents, it does not have to come out of one's own pocket. A parent can say, I'd love air conditioning in the house. That's fine. You call up the servicemen, you get them to put it in, and you just let your parents know, by the way, I'm going on your credit card. That's perfectly fine. But we need to define what taking care of parents are. The obligation of kivud of a means, making sure that our parents are taken care of. To take care of them means that there was a rabbi named Rav Asi. Rav Asi lived in Babylon. He had an elderly mother, and his mother said to him, get me some jewelry. I want some jewelry. So he got her. He made her some jewelry. Now, let me make an observation. Taking care of parents, honoring parents, it does not have to come out of one's own pocket. A parent can say, I'd love air conditioning in the house. That's fine. You call up the servicemen, you get them to put it in, and you just let your parents know, by the way, I'm going on your credit card. That's perfectly fine. But we need to define what taking care of parents are. The obligation of kivud of a means, making sure that our parents are taken care of. To take care of them means that they have what they need. The simpler cases are food or drink. If your mother comes into your house and sits down and you go to the fridge and get them some iced tea, you've performed a positive commandment from the Torah of honoring your parents. You help them in, you help them out, you take them around where they need to in the car, that's fine. But the cost, this may sound a little strange, if you bring them the iced tea and said that'll be $1.25, you have performed the commandment. I'm not saying it's the nicest, you're not the nicest kid, but one does not have to honor their parents using their own pocketbook. Over here it says that she wants a jewelry. He said, fine, I'll get you some jewelry, no problem, made some jewelry. She then says, I want a man. Okay, she's an old woman, so again, this is great. He goes, I want a man. I should have said, go to the Catskills.
I'm not that old.
Now you have to do an introduction. Should have gone to the Catskills. He says, I want a man. So he said, I'll keep my eye open. Look around, see if there's somebody appropriate. Then she says something which is very strange. She says, I want a guy who's good looking, just like you. And that got a little weird. Because Rav Asi now already suspected that his mother maybe is losing it a bit, and it says that he picks up and he moves. He goes to Israel. While he was in Israel, he gets a message that his mother's on the way and she's following after him. He goes and asks a rabbi, what is the law? Is one allowed to leave the land of Israel? The rabbi answers, no. But by the way, that is Jewish law. All things equal, if you're in the land of Israel, you don't leave. He then says, what about if the reason I want to go is because of my mother? And there's again a very strange answer here. He says, I don't know. Now, I don't think Rabbi Yochanan, who was asked, I don't think it was that he didn't know the law. It's that he didn't have enough information over here to be able to know what exactly the situation is. He comes again and he asks, and finally, after this third time of asking, the rabbi says, listen, I see that you really want to go, so go ahead. But by the way, this doesn't mean if you keep asking the rabbi a question, you'll eventually get the answer that you want. It seems to be that Rav Asi was quite concerned about his mother, and the first time he asked, he says, I just don't know. We'll see what the issue is in a moment. It says that, I'm skipping a little bit, but as he gets near to where his mother was supposed along the way, he found out that she had passed away and that she was now in a coffin. And he said, had I known, I never would have left. Now, the commentaries have a wonderful time with this passage. What does it mean? Just going backwards, when he says, I never would have left. Does it mean I never would have left my mother's side in the first place? Or does it mean I never would have left Israel if I would have known that she's already passed away? Commentaries go in different ways. Maimonides uses this story as the basis for the principles of how to treat parents who are elderly, infirm, or even perhaps suffering from dementia. He says that if someone's parents, if their mother or father has gone crazy, senile or crazy, and that's not a technical medical term, crazy, it's misha nitrufadato, they become unmanageable. He says you should try to treat them according to their understanding until God has mercy on them, which if you really think about it, is a beautiful line. You do what's best for them. She wants jewelry, I'll get you jewelry. You want this, I'll get you this. She said, I have this. Fine. You do what you can, even though it may not make the most sense. You do what you can till God should have mercy. And we understand that line, God having mercy, could be in some cases them getting better, and in some cases it could be the opposite. But then he gives an incredible psychological insight, and I'll read this in Hebrew. But if he can no longer do it because they've become too crazy, and psychologically, emotionally, he can't stand it. It's not easy seeing a loved one who's slowly slipping away. He says, you just can't do it. He says, Yenicham, you can go. You can go and you can hire somebody else who should take care of them, and he has a very important line over here, according to what they deserve. Right? It does not, I don't want to get involved in care and so on. I don't know what places are like in terms of what kind of care they get. Basically, we have an obligation of taking care of our parents. When it becomes too difficult emotionally, it becomes too difficult practically for us to do it. Maimonides says, you're allowed to back up. And by the way, this is Jewish law. This is brought down in the Shulchan Aruch. This is normative law. But what's the catch? The catch is that if I can no longer do it, I must make sure that they are taken care of. But not just taken care of, which means that someone's throwing food at them once a day or twice a day or even three times a day. But they're taken care of in the way that they actually deserve. Which means that the commandment to take care of our parents is something which the starting point is certainly that which is logical. But the particular situations at times transcends logic. And that took us on all these sort of situations which are not normative. When it becomes quite difficult and we can come up with 101 different excuses why we no longer want to or have to or should take care of them, our obligation at best switches to a second level, and that is that even if we can no longer be the primary caregiver, what we must do at that point is to make sure that they are getting what they deserve. Again, if you want to ask the monetary issue, out of whose bank account does this come? It comes out of their own bank account. You don't have to pay, although I will stress, if your parents can take care of themselves, they don't have the resources, and if you do have the resources, when it comes to laws of tzedakah, laws of charity, the law really is that charity begins in the home. If you have the resources, rather than say, listen, they can't afford any good care, and therefore I'm just whatever they can afford, that's not the case. But we see, as I said, two things in my mind, and this will draw to an end so that we could bench, and those of you who must get back to work can do such. We see that we should try as much as we can. We should care for them according to wherever their mind takes them. If it becomes too complex, we have a dispensation, but the dispensation is only that we don't have to provide the primary care, but we still have to make sure that they're taken care of in the way that they absolutely deserve. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi Kahn, and for, I think, presenting us with a clear definition of what it means to take care of parents. Obviously.
Yes. Yes.
I have a lot of people that I work with that wonder how much do they deserve and who decides that.
You know, as I suggested before, yes, sorry. The question is, when Maimonides said is that a parent should be treated the way that they deserve to be treated, this is one of the things that it's worthwhile to bring a third person in, to bring the rabbi in and say, here's the situation, here are the options, I can keep them at home, but this and this will take place, I can put them in this place, but this is the situation, but there's another place which is very expensive, you know. What exactly is as they deserve? I think that it's very difficult for us, especially when we're involved in this emotionally, to be able to make that decision, and then you have this wonderful combination of emotions and finances. And sometimes you really need the third person to come in to take a look and to give a learned decision on that. I'm sorry if that sounds like a cop-out, but from my experience, it's incredibly sound advice to have the rabbi run through the options and give the advice or the ruling sometimes. Yes?
What if there's a number of brothers and sisters that are involved? Is it more responsibility on the older brother, or the more financially secure sister or something to...
Okay. The question is, of the number of different siblings, who has more responsibilities? The eldest, is it the sister? It's interesting, but this is perhaps more of a sociological observation than anything else, is that the older daughter is the one more often than not who tends to take that responsibility. I'm not aware of Jewish law making any such statement. In fact, we may find quite the opposite of where the daughter herself may be involved in her own life, her own family, and if anything, it may be the son who would have more of an obligation than a daughter would. But each one has the basic obligation to see that the parents are cared for. That's the obligation. So therefore, technically speaking, if one person is taking care of them, and you're not, but they're being taken care of, you don't have the same obligation, but then there's a question of decency.
And if somebody has more financial resources, they can take care of certain aspects of it. Somebody has more time in their hands, but maybe not as much money, they can do other aspects of taking care of the process.
But we have to look at it. We have to look at it as, again, the most basic commandment. And let me throw one more thought in. How do we think our kids will take care of us? Isn't the most important lesson they can possibly receive is by seeing the way that they treated their parents? That we treat our parents? That's the lesson they're going to get. I can assure you that anyone who packs their parents off to an old age home, that their children will have heard a very important lesson. One of the most difficult things my parents did when I was growing up is my grandmother, her husband passed away, my grandfather passed away, and she began to suffer. She lost the ability of recognizing people around her. Physically, she was healthy. And my parents kept her in the home for 8 years with full-time nursing care. Now, the financial resources of such a thing is incredible, but it's more than that. It's not just the finances. It's having a stranger in your home all the time, having the responsibility. But I cannot imagine any more effective lesson that my parents gave me growing up than knowing that you care for your parents. Yes?
What happens if your parents don't want to be cared for?
Okay, that's a good question. What if your parents don't want to be cared for?
Yeah, what if they want to be left alone and they don't want to dote over them or to have much of a relationship with them?
Well, we again have to do the sort of thing with intelligence. Make sure that they are being cared for. Again, sometimes at a little bit of a distance. If there comes a point that you see that they're just no situation is deteriorating and they're not being cared for, at that point one has to step in and be a little bit more forceful. But of course there are legal issues and medical issues and other issues, but at some point one does have to step in. Okay. Thank you.